Welcome to Counter Stories, a program by people of color, for people of color, and everybody else. It's our favorite time of the day. Let's get this going. My name is Luz Maria Frias. I'm an attorney and public policy specialist and consultant on race equity.
Anthony Galloway, executive director of the Arts Dust Center for the African Diaspora.
Haley, owner of the Other Media Group.
Don Eubanks, associate professor at Metropolitan State University and cultural consultant.
And I'm Marianne Combs. I'm a reporter here at Minnesota Public Radio News.
Well, we've got so much to talk about today, and I think about some of the recent events that we've seen in print, but also certainly on various news channels regarding names and the importance of names. And I thought we could start off with that and kind of riff off of that, depending on how many stories that we have and observations that we have of our own through our lived experiences.
Wait, what did I say when we just did introductions right now? Did I say my real name or did I say my white version name?
Good question.
I don't even know. I mix it up every time. I don't even know. I don't know when I say my real name and when I just say my white version name.
That actually came up when I was talking with students. Like, at some point, you get to this point where you stop. You can't.
It all merges into one, and yeah. It's like, whatever, I'll go by anything that's close.
Well, you know, if we think about Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is now being referred to as AOC for short. And some people have taken some umbrage with that because why are we putting an acronym on her moniker rather than her full name? And she's, of course, indicated that she's okay with that. She just doesn't want it to be butchered, meaning having some other name come up with that. But I think when we talk about the importance of maintaining and honoring names, there's so much there to unpack. And I'm hoping that, you know, each one of us is able to contribute our own life stories. I can remember myself in second grade, the teacher was taking roll call. And I grew up inner city Chicago. And at that point, it was a Polish neighborhood before it became a Mexican neighborhood about 15 years later. So I'm sitting in my second grade classroom, and it was in a Catholic school. So the nun begins her roll call. And, of course, she calls everybody by name, John and Susie and Michael and so on and so forth. And then she gets to me, and she looks at my name, and she looks up, and she looks down, and she looks up.
And that's when you go, yep, that's me right here.
And, you know, you're in second grade, so you're trying to figure this out. And at some point, she starts stuttering, so I knew it was my name. And instead of saying Luz, she said she couldn't pronounce it. She started Luz, and she then came up with Lucy. And at that point, she created this identity for me that was all made up. I never had gone by that name, and I became known as Lucy in her classroom, but then throughout the school. And then at some point, my friends were calling my house asking for Lucy, and my parents are like, who's Lucy? So I had explained to them what was going on. But I'll have you know that to this day, my childhood friends still know me as Lucy.
Wow.
Because of the fact that I was renamed, you know, my name was anglicized by my teacher. And we were taught, of course, to respect your teachers. So we didn't challenge this anglicizing of my name at that point. And I struggled with that as I grew older and wanting to reclaim my name. I'm actually named after my mother, and her name is Luz Maria, just as mine is. And it wasn't until I was in law school, actually, because I tried to do that in my undergraduate studies, but there were still a number of folks who knew me from grade school,
right,
who would still call me Lucy. So it wasn't until I left the state and went to law school out of state that I was able to reclaim my identity and my heritage. But it was that duality and that conflict and tension of being called by one name by a certain group in the community and then internally my family calling me by a different name. And it's just
you know, the same thing happened when I was like in first or second grade to my cousin who has a Hmong name that our teacher couldn't say. So she named him Bruce because his last name is Lee.
Really?
Wow.
And he became Bruce Lee, like, for the rest of our childhood and high school.
A lot of times it's not there's not even an attempt to shorten it, right? So if I had a long name, it's not, I'm going to call you, instead of Ronaldo, I'm going to call you Ron. It's not, we're not, a lot of the renamings that I have experienced, both from my own students, but then also peers, has been just that. I'm going to call you something that's either easy for me or, but it's not going to be an attempt to try to keep any piece of your regular name. I have one student, Thujer, who was in one of my programs, and they had changed his name to Tater.
What?
Right. And so there doesn't necessarily need to have a logical, like,
connection
to...
Hey, know. I was China Doll, so...
Wait. Okay, you gotta tell me that story. How are you...
Oh, because people couldn't say my name in elementary school. And this one girl who was in my school said, you look like a China Doll. And so then I was like China Doll for, like, 2 years.
And that's what your fellow students called you?
Yeah.
Not... Did your teachers call you that?
No. My teachers wouldn't say Haley or Holly or Haley or Lee, whatever comes close. Hiley. I got Hiley a lot. Wow. And I just answered to, because it's like to the point where I'm just like, yeah, whatever. When my parents came to this country, they changed the spelling of my parents' last name to L-Y instead of L-E-E. So when I was in elementary school, my dad was like, I'm going to go back and have it changed. And I'm going to have all your names changed. And then we were all like, we wanted to pick American names. And so we each gave him a list of, like, the American names. He didn't change anybody's first names. He changed all of our last names. And he was like, that's it. And we have some friends and relatives who had that opportunity when they were younger to pick an American name and have their name be changed. And a lot of kids, you know, you're in third, fourth grade, you choose your friend's name. So we have, like, a lot of, like, Derek's and Jacob's, you know, of older Hmong people who that's now their legal name because... They got to choose a name for themselves, and they chose the most American name that they could think of at that time.
Who gave them the choice?
A lot of times our names are incorrectly spelled.
Right.
Our parents will go back and do changes. And once they apply for the changes, you can add or subtract a name, change your name, first name as well as your last name.
You're talking about going through the court system.
Yes.
To change
it. To make it legal. Yep.
I have a very anglicized name, Anthony, right? Latin roots. And even my name, though, whenever it's a substitute teacher, just thinking about going through school, even with my name, there's something else to it, right? I would come up to a teacher who knows my name is Anthony, and I don't like any of the other nicknames because my mom was like, you better have folks call you the name that I gave you, right? And so I would have these teachers come in, and they might shorten. They might go, hey, Tony, or do something extra. It's like the fist bump as soon as I walk up. Everybody else is a handshake, but all of a sudden there's a fist bump when I come in, right? I even face those kind of things with a name that's not supposed to be looked at as a quote-unquote foreign name, right? Which is... the story that I expected to hear much more often.
But I think that, because there's so much to unpack here, my mind is all over the place. Because, you know, the history of my ancestors, American Indians, take my mother's maiden name, for instance, is Sam. And think about that. Sam is not a name that's indigenous to our community. My spirit name is something I very seldom share, but my spirit name is Gitgibanez. My grandfather's name was Chinooden. Where do you get Sam, right? So for us, it was part of that process of saving the man and getting rid of the Indian, the attempt at forcibly eliminating our culture, and you do that by changing your names. And so... much like what happened in your community, Hilly, in our community, often when the missionaries or when we were on the reservations and when they created the reservation roles, they assigned Anglo names. You know, I tried to find out where we got the last name Sam, because Sam generally is a first name, right? Not a last name. But, but that process was purposeful. So my name is Donald. It's Gaelic, right? So, but my last name is Eubanks, and that's from my father's side, who is Black, African-American, and we think that name traces back to a plantation in Virginia. So even with that name isn't really the name of what our ancestors had when they first came over.
When you're making that point, done, the first thing that came to my mind was the scene in Roots with Kunta Kinte.
Yep. Mm.
And the slave master assigning a name to Kunta Kinte.
It was Toby.
Okay, sorry. It was Toby. And Kunta refusing to relinquish. And just really highlighting the fact that the name that we're all given at birth, there's so much attachment to that in terms of our identity, our family, our culture, our heritage. And you think about family, who in your family may have had that name? And mm-hmm. it's your way of honoring that family member who may or may not still be with us. But the very core of who we are as individuals is so key. And that was such a powerful moment I remember in that film.
I do think it seems like the thread that's running through all of this is power and control. And mm-hmm. somebody taking just the power of your own identity, of what you, how you know yourself away from you, how you call yourself away from you. And I wonder about like the difference between the Kunta Kinte scene, where it's very much this is part of power and control, and you are your property now. You don't even have your own name, versus children in the school system. And like, what's going on in that dynamic? What's going through that teacher's mind when they're like, you know what? I'm just going to call you this because I can't pronounce your name the correct way. And are they aware of the ramifications of the decision that they're making when they do that?
I understand your point, and your question is, I think it's a really insightful one. And what comes to mind for me is that's what happens with privilege and with implicit bias, right? Mm-hmm. Privilege is power. And believing that as a teacher that you can assign a name, whether it's a nickname, mm-hmm. you know, trying to shorten Anthony to Tony, mm-hmm. or butchering Halee's name, or reassigning a name to them, for me that is actually longer than the original name, right? Yeah. Four letters versus three letters. It is power.
In our culture, I don't know, I don't think that we really name people after other people. But one thing that, like, I've kind of been disappointed in recently, I don't have kids, and so I really shouldn't say or whatever, but a lot of people who are having kids now give their kids American first names, Anglo first names, Hmong middle names, as a way of saying we still want to respect that we're Hmong, you know, but they give them English first names. And at first I was like, oh, that's, you know, I don't really like that. And then I worked for a company, and I was helping in the HR department, and they were going through resumes. And I legit saw them put resumes of people's names they could not say aside. Mm-hmm. And so as much as it's like, okay, you're trying to erase that your child is Hmong, on the other end, you're giving them a leg up in the world, and that's mm. just reality.
Well, and that's a great point, because there is so much research on that name bias, and the study is that you can have two identical resumes, because this mm-hmm. is a research study, so it's scientific. And it's identical. It's not similar to. It's literally identical. And one candidate's name is Jamal. The other candidate's name is John. And Jamal does not get an interview, but yet John does. Mm-hmm. And the same holds true with other names that might sound, quote unquote, urban or ethnic, like Lakeisha versus Linda.
I saw it happen, and I remember just saying, why did you do that? Like, what's wrong with this candidate? And nobody would say it was because of the name, but as I'm sitting there and I'm watching, there's a pattern, right? And then the response is, we get so many applications, we really just don't have time to go through everybody's. You know, they're justifying it in a way.
Again, that's implicit bias,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I wrote an op-ed on this a few years ago, because I actually have a daughter, and this happened to her, where she had sent out over 100 resumes with her birth name, and was not getting any play. And this is a STEM major, graduate. So arguably
a woman. Yeah.
So arguably, you know, you've got a woman who is unrepresented and underrepresented, person of color who's underrepresented, and graduating with a degree that is very competitive, and also her grades. And after 3+ months of just being disillusioned with the fact that she was getting no callbacks or invitations for an interview, that I said to her, let's run a social experiment and let's change your name. Mm. And we changed her name on the resume. And within the first three resumes that went out, all three of them got interviews. And
wow.
And she landed one of those positions. It's different now. It's fast forward now almost 5 years. And she hasn't been facing that same name bias. But it was really an interesting chapter. And what it did to her psyche was just having her feel that she was less worthy of an opportunity without her knowledge of why. And then it was that name bias.
Sounds like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. On the one hand, you're having your identity taken away from you. But if you do claim your identity, you're going to be just judged down the line and have other opportunities taken away from you.
It is, because there's, you know, not to be a downer, but this is the reality of things, right? Is the reality of things is if you put in an application and your name is Melissa instead of Kajol, you're probably going to get a call back faster than Kajol would, you know?
There's a fatigue that sets in over time, too, because over and over again, if I have to be the one that always constantly corrects, and over time, you just figure out the easiest ways not to spend that energy. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of the conversations I had with one of my students was centered around that, you know, in an everyday space. At one point, you know, I used to fight for it. And at another point, I'm just like, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to figure out a way to make it easy. And I think this clip talking about how she encounters it on a daily basis really tees that up well.
My name is Afia.
Afia. Spell it for me.
A-F-I-Y-A.
And last name?
Ward, W-A-R-D.
So Afia Ward, right? Now for me, I see that written and immediately I think, yeah, Afia. What are some times where folks have just not gotten your name right?
I go to Starbucks almost probably at least every other day before school. And at this point, I probably just tell them that my name is Sophia when they ask for my name to put right down, because I get tired of saying Afia. No, Afia. No, I said Afia.
There's a point where in continuing to talk to her, just the amount of times where you negotiate, oh, I'm just not going to expend that energy today. So then I just have to sit and take somebody not putting in the extra effort to give me the name, which has real important meaning. It's not an innocuous thing. It's not just something that I have to give you because that's what people do. There's meaning behind that. And at one point, she just says, I'm stopped expending the energy.
Don't waste your energy, especially people that you're never going to see again, or people that, you know, isn't going to make a difference in your life. My sister's name is Vicky. Somehow my oldest sister got like an American Anglo name, so her name is Vicky. And I went to visit her in the hospital once, and I said, do you need anything? She said, why don't you pick me up coffee? So I picked up some coffees, and I met her at the hospital where she was with her baby was having surgery. And she looks at it, and she's like, I think you took the wrong person's coffee. It says Holly on here. And I was like, it's just easier to say Holly. People know Holly, so it's just easier. I'm not going to sit there and try to spell my name for somebody, and then they're going to say, how do you pronounce it? How do you really pronounce it? And then we spend 20 minutes of me saying my name and them trying to repeat it to me.
So there are a couple of thoughts here, to your point, Anthony, and then Hali, where when we live in a state such as Minnesota where conflict avoidance, you know, the Minnesota nice thing, ends up being an issue, I can see how there is a fatigue with that. But I also think, at least for myself, I've reached a point in my life where I won't surrender that, you know, and say I'm calling a customer service place and I'm on the phone, whether it's the light company or whatever, and I'll spell my name religiously. I'll say L-U-Z, and then I'll say Z as in zebra, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other person on the other side will say, can you say that again? And so I'll spell it the second time. And again, I'll say again, Z as in zebra. And they'll say L-U-D, you know. And then finally, I'll say, I've gotten to a point where I will ask, what is it about three letters in a name that's causing you difficulty? And then there's a long pause. And then I ask them, would we be having the same difficulty if my name were Liz? And the person says, no. I said, okay, so then Liz is something that you can get to, and my name, Luce, should be something that you should be able to get to as well.
I love that you're, like, educating people, because I have the same issue, except that my first and last name rhyme.
That's right, yeah.
So my name is H-L-E-E-L-E-E. So I always being like, okay, now I'm beginning the last name, and now I'm beginning the first name. But the thing, and I want to say this to people who are listening, especially like white people who are listening going, so what do you want us to do? You guys have these names that we can't say. Mm-hmm. The thing is try, right? And so like my husband's white and I always told him, I'm not going to marry you until you can say my name the Hmong way. And he tried and tried and years and years and years. And I'm like, you know, he can't do it. He just can't do it sometimes. So their tongues don't do this. And he doesn't understand tones, you know, and stuff like that. So I said, okay, it's fine. You know,
so you married him anyway.
So I married him anyway. And so, but he tried. We did for a couple times, you know, go through the, how do you say it? And then he tried to repeat it to me for 20 minutes. And we did that. But, you know, I came to accept, like, he can't say it and that's okay. He's tried. And so it's like, instead of asking and being like, that's not a real name or how do you do that? Just try.
Yeah. And that's different from the experience of a friend of mine who was in college who was Korean and her name was Juhi. And a guy said, well, that's just too difficult. I'm just going to call you Judy. And the willing sort of like, mm-hmm. no, I could make an effort, but I'm not
right,
going to.
Right.
Yeah.
And my comment was, you know, I am one of those individuals also where it is very hard for me to pronounce certain sounds, certain tones. I don't know why, but it just is. And I dread the first day of school. Because 60 to 65% of our students are immigrant refugee students that come from all over, from Asia, from Africa. And I will ask the student, instead of me even attempting, I will just ask the students what your name is, how do you pronounce it, and what do you want us to call you? And that's how I go about doing it, because I had one Hmong student. I can say it. I can say her Hmong name now. But when I first looked at it, it was N-T-X-I-M. I didn't have a clue. And I asked her, how do you pronounce your name? And she said, Z. I had to ask her three times because I'm listening for the N-T, which is the anglicized way, right? It was not in there at all. It was Z. And that
so
I could
you were
say.
Looking for the phonetic connection
and
between
that,
what she said.
Because that is how we were taught in grade school, yep. to phonetically sound out names.
I was in D.C. a few weeks ago, and I was having drinks with this new Hmong woman that I met through my cousin. And she said, hi, my name is D. And I said, is your name really D, or is that what the white people call you? And she said, it's actually D. And I was like, okay, good, because I have a cousin here in Minnesota, her name is not D, but everybody professionally knows her as D because it's easier for her to do that. So when I'm out in the community and we run into each other and I say her real name, people are like, who are you talking about? And she literally came up to me and whispered to me that everyone calls me D.
You're listening to Counter Stories on Minnesota Public Radio News. We'll be right back with more of this conversation about names and the importance of getting it right. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Marianne Combs, and this is Counter Stories, where we talk about issues surrounding race and identity. My co-hosts are Donald Eubanks, Luz Maria Frias, Anthony Galloway, and Khalil Lee. And Don, you had a conversation with a colleague of yours. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, along the same lines as what I just brought up in terms of my inability to pronounce some of my students' name. There's a colleague of mine that I talked to. And the first time I met him was at his birthday party. And he pronounced his name for me. I attempted it. He pronounced it again. I attempted it again. And then he finally told me his middle name, which I could say, even though it was French.
My full name is Makombil Etienne Jevi. And one thing that comes up a lot of time is how to say your name. Where is your name from? Can I call you Dr. D as opposed to Dr. Jevi? Can I call you man instead of saying Makondeo or trying to say Makondeo?
So I call him Etienne, and Etienne is actually a physician, and he works in three or four to five different hospital settings. And so Etienne shared with me, as a professional, as a doctor, as a provider, how often, like almost every day, either his colleagues or his patients cannot pronounce his name or can't even attempt to pronounce his name. They can't say his last name. And so they will make up, you know, so they call him D. They'll call him, you know, Mr. D or...
So, okay, so I had a doctor, my chiropractor, and I could not pronounce her last name for the life of me. And I didn't see her regularly, so when I did go in, I'd have the spelling of her name, and I'd be like, I already forgot how the receptionist told me last time. But I call her doctor. I just call her doctor. I don't try to make up a new name for her. I understand her name, she's from Africa, and her name is from Africa, and I can't say it, or, you know, I can't remember how to say it. The letters, like you say, didn't translate for me. So I just called her doctor, you know. I tried to be respectful and just call her doctor instead of trying to give her a new name that would make me feel more comfortable.
You know, when we think about ways to approach individuals whose names are not familiar to you, you know, just the way you've said Don and Halee, maybe that's something that we can really spend some time on, because there are some really natural ways to begin to address that and for it to be authentic, just like you just offered right now, Halee, with saying doctor, even though you don't use her surname associated with it, you're still maintaining that level of identity and not having her feel that she's been otherized, you know, by way of that interaction with you. But I think for me, when I've spoken with folks who look at my name and get kind of discombobulated, what has been easiest is when people ask me, much like what you said at the top of the hour here, Don, how would you like me to pronounce your name, or I'm having a hard time understanding how I should pronounce it. Can you walk me through it? And we actually will practice it a couple of times, you know, in real time. And then that person would feel more comfortable going forward. And if they forget, they forget. But I think what we're all getting to is at least make an effort, be authentic about it, and not then go into this automatic naming mode, Marianne, right, the way it happened to your friend in college.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting. Facebook has a lot of detractors, but the one thing I do enjoy about it is that people can actually put pronouncers for their names on their profile. So you can go to their profile, and if they have a name that's at all unusual, in most cases, they will put a pronouncer up there, and you can learn.
The thing with Facebook, and this happens in the schools too, is people with one-letter last names, it will tell you that's not a real last name. Ugh. And you have to put a real, you know, you can't have one letter as your last name. And I was, one of my teacher friends was telling me she had a lot of immigrant students, and their last names didn't meet the character requirements or something to be put into the system, you know?
There's a denial of identity piece here, too, that comes up. It came up a lot with students as well. So not just interactions where a person's getting the name wrong, but your pushback is somehow used against you, right? So if I fight for my name, which means something, and then do that, at some point, a lot of the students that I was talking to would register that teachers, it would start to ruin the interaction, mm-hmm, with between them and their teachers. And it's kind of assertion of power as you spoke to earlier. But that denial of identity too, so I give up on trying to get folks to say my name right. But what about all the other treatment things that go along with it, right? So I'm going to get your name wrong, and I'm going to change it in the system to make it easier for me. And when you try to fight for that identity piece back, I'm going to hold it against you as if you're not going along with the program, as if it's just an innocuous thing to do. That was a huge issue when the students would talk about it. And so the stories of the getting their names wrong always eventually got into very negative interactions with staff in particular, but then other students.
Well, we do live in Minnesota, where, you know, conflict avoidance is something that is ingrained in folks. I think about, I sat on a board that was, you know, pretty influential for some time. And for about five of those years, this one fellow board member would call me Luz. No matter how many times the other 15 or 20 people in the room would call me Luz, he stuck to Luz. And it wasn't until an ally, another person, in real time during a meeting said, "Hey, why do you keep calling her Luz? Her name is not Luz. It's Luz." And it was, you know, of course, I had corrected the guy many times over and just thought, you know, there's just no real sense of accomplishment here because every day, you know, it would be that. And it wasn't until they had that conversation where this ally came in very proactively, and he had lost his patience with the other guy and just called him out on the record, if you will. And don't you know, that was enough for him to change how he pronounced my name.
And did he have a response, though, as to, like, why he couldn't get it right or why he wouldn't bother?
Oh, kind of the backpedaling. Oh, I didn't realize it. I'm doing the best I could kind of stuff, you know.
Did you believe him, though?
It didn't really matter to me, you know, whether he was telling the truth or not. I think what for me, in that setting, what was most valuable is to have this ally come forward and call out the behavior, just like we would expect in anything else. If you are in a surrounding where someone is being mistreated, in any way disrespected, what is most helpful to that person who's on the receiving end of that disrespect is for a third person to come in and help neutralize the situation and help take the negative attention from you and you know, reposition it. And that's just something that I offer up for those who are listening, that if you happen to find yourself in a setting where someone is butchering someone's name or, you know, being disrespectful, that we could all step up and have a voice there.
So, and also along those lines of having an ally to step up for you, with a lot of the people I work with them on short-term projects. And so if they don't say my name right after a couple of tries, I just go with what they say. And so I was with the woman and she called me Haley. And I was like, you know, it's close enough, whatever. So I kept going with it. And then we ran into somebody I know who called me Hali. And the woman took me aside and said, "Is your name not Haley?" And I was like, you know, it's close enough. And she said, "Oh, why didn't you?" And she was really frustrated that I didn't tell her, even though I corrected her several times. And it made me kind of feel bad. But at the same time, I'm like, I do this every day. Mm-hmm. And so even, you know, so I'm telling people who are listening to this, if you're saying something, saying someone's name wrong and they don't correct you, it might just be that they're tired of correcting people and, you know, don't get frustrated with them and don't get mad with them that's what they're doing, because we deal with it so much every day.
But it's also, it sounds like you corrected her.
I had,
early on,
right.
And she wasn't listening.
Right.
She may have been hearing you, but she wasn't listening to what your point was.
Right, until somebody else called me something out in public. We were out in public together.
I'd like to switch tracks just slightly, because one of the things I also think is interesting is when people who are born with names that are not of their ethnic or cultural identity, and then they decide, you know what, I'm going to claim a name for myself. I'm going to change my name to something that actually does reflect my heritage. And it feels like, you know, if somebody says, you know, well, I'm Black Muslim, and so I'm changing my name to Mahmoud or to some other name, that oftentimes in the culture there's pushback against changing your name and changing it to a different culture, a cultural identity. Like, well, why didn't you stick with your original name? You know, John was just fine. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, for you, the power of the name in terms of why it's important to sometimes reflect the cultural identity.
This came up when my oldest was, we were coming up with a name for her. We went with Hadiyah, with an H on either end, H-A-D-I-Y-A-H. And I remember as we had decided on that name and were pretty sure that that's what it was going to be, I had family members who were like, you know, you could do that. And it's not necessarily from the standpoint of not wanting to connect with cultural heritage, but thinking about ease of her later on. So they're like, are you sure you want to name her an Arabic name?
Yes.
Are you sure you want to do that? Aren't you Christian? What does that mean? You know, and she has an Arabic first name and a Hebrew middle name, right? And so I actually had folks in family come and say, well, if you know, they'd be fine with Keisha. You know, folks are starting to get all right with Keisha. But this was just a little much for some folks in my family who actually pulled me aside and actually had that conversation about, what are you setting her up for? Mm. And I thought that was fascinating coming from folks who— would be in full agreement with the entire conversation. And then, to your point, Lee, the reality piece. Mm-hmm. What is life going to look like then? Well,
and I think that, you know, what we're touching on is the acculturation to become American is so strong, because even, you know, as we were talking, all the examples we have kind of given have been from various different communities of color. My colleague from West Africa, what happened to my ancestors, Native Americans, and how we were all assigned Christian names. So, you know, there's that really heavy current of Americanizing your name, because I think even white Europeans who came from countries other than England, where we get Anglo-Saxon, WASP, Protestant, strong cultural, ethnic Americanization here in this country, and history has told us that even white Europeans who came here from Germany, from Italy, from countries that spoke something other than English, they had to change their names, or names were changed also.
So my husband was doing his ancestry thing, and you could actually see, like, your ancestors signing the census. And he could see that in 10 years, they went from being Finnish to Swedish, because that's what was most acceptable in their neighborhood. Mm. And they changed their last name. And so it's like, okay, so I have this bone to pick with people who are white people who are obsessed with doing this ancestry thing. And then, oh, I'm so diverse and wonderful, you know. But anyways.
That's a whole nother show.
Yes.
We could dissect that too.
And can go back and see, even though there were white people living amongst white people, they had to change and tell people there was something else just to fit in that neighborhood.
And that's what I was getting at. So the strong identification of what it is to be American has had that impact across all kinds of cultures, all kinds of
names. So what if we say,
names.
Okay, so they had to do it, then we should do it too.
Pardon me?
The white people had to change their name when they lived with other white people. Shouldn't we do that too?
Well, no, they didn't have to. Many chose to in order to fit in. And so there's a difference, right? With the stories that were shared with me by, you know, people that I grew up with, when they would relate their history, they would say that their grandparents changed their name. I heard it a lot, you know, because here in Minnesota, a lot of folks, were, at least in the Twin Cities, were Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, or depending on where you lived. And in Northeast Minneapolis, there was a lot of Poles, a lot of Eastern Slavic. And I would hear stories that their grandparents changed their name because, one, people couldn't pronounce it, and two, they wanted to blend in. And for them, it worked. Right?
But people get so upset.
They can blend in when they're
Olsen with an E-N versus Olsen with an O-N.
They can blend in while walking around. We can't. We can't blend in while walking around.
But I mean, but that's the difference. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I see.
I also am, there are a couple of other thoughts running in my mind as you're speaking, Don. One of which is when you said earlier your spirit name, and I think we should unpack that because I think our listeners could learn from that conversation as well. But before doing that, I also, when you were talking about American names, I was thinking, well, the indigenous people are the original American. So, you know, I had to kind of get to where you were going because I was having a difference of opinion there. But I think about there are two local leaders who, husband and wife, and their last name is Bad Heart Bull.
Mm-hmm.
Very well known. And I remember with clarity the gentleman who we got to know each other and we were working in a certain setting. And we then had a common friend, you know, who he had met subsequently. And that friend was almost like fetishizing his last name, you know, because it was Bad Heart Bull. And every time, you know, we talked, he just was just... And I sat there and I thought, is this the first time you've ever had someone from the indigenous community in your life, because it just everything had to be, you know, and at one point he had put forth, you know, a suggestion to have some to do something. And he said this to me, and I said, you know, you might want to ask him first rather than just kind of getting on this whole fetishizing stuff. And I don't know if you've seen that, but it happened in that setting and a couple of other settings only with names that were indigenous, you know. I don't know if you've seen that, but well, I know I've seen it more than a handful of times with friends within my circle.
It depends on, I mean, because even with that, okay, with that name, because I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But even if we were to take that name and dissect it, it's still English. So it's still an English interpretation of what their indigenous Lakota name mm-hmm. used to be. Mm-hmm. Right. And so even with that, because, yeah, I hear that a lot from the dominant culture when they come across a name, you know, Get to Give an Ace is a name that was given to me by my uncle. But it's a name that has a long history.
And that's your spirit name.
That's my spirit. That's the name that we are given. Usually, before culture broke down, you actually could maybe have a couple of different names and you would be named after you were born. And then when we would kind of go through our rite of passage, we might receive another name. And what I mean by my spirit name is when I communicate with Gichimanidu, with our image of a higher being, that's the name that I communicate and use. When I'm in my community and I am introducing myself, I'm introducing myself with my spirit name, Get to Give an Ace. Outside of that, I pick and choose when I use that name. So a lot of people don't know that I have the spirit name.
They do now.
You're correct, Mary. They do now. And so for me, there's power in that name. And when I'm in my community recognizes that power. The name that you had referenced, I'm not even quite sure what the translation of that would be in Lakota, because that happened a lot where our names then would be given English interpretations mm-hmm. of what they were supposed to be. Because Crazy Horse's name wasn't Crazy Horse. Mm-hmm. Sitting Bull wasn't Sitting Bull.
Running Elk.
Exactly. I mean, Black Elk, you know, those were American names assigned to their Lakota name as their best guesstimation. But even going back to your comment, all right, that started this portion of this conversation, in terms of my ancestors being the original inhabitants of this land, but even in that description, what you said of America, and America didn't exist, right? And so whenever we have this conversation and we go back in history, and when someone says, you know, your people were in America, I stop them. I said, no, this wasn't America. All right. And I'm sure we had a name in Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, that we used to describe the land. You know, it wouldn't have been a name we assigned this entire country, but every tribe and every tongue on this continent had a term in their language that we would call this place, and it wasn't America. Mm-hmm. So even when we're talking and describing that, the fact that we're using English and putting it in that frame denies who we were and where we come from.
I have a quick question. So given all that we've talked about names and people and their names, what do you think about place names and the idea of, you know, lakes being renamed, you know, going back to their original place names versus settler colonizer place names?
Well, I mean, you bring up an important piece that's to this, and that's the connection to history with names, right? Mm-hmm. So even our last name, you made mention of following Eubanks, right? At the end of that at some point, if you're multi-generational African-American, you're going to come up with the question of where that name comes from, mm-hmm. right? That legacy piece is an important space, not only in that regard in terms of the history of the names, but then also the power that's gone into those names over time, right? The expansion of more Afrocentric names amongst African-Americans in the power movements was an important piece of reclaiming what that is. And so I think that goes into this notion that names are a bigger deal than we might realize. And mm-hmm. we don't take the time to figure that out, then not only are we denying identity and not only are we asserting power, but we're also coming face to face with this legacy piece, right? The phrase Redskins in the United States or in Minnesota, we should be particularly sensitive to that because we had a practice for years with our own governor having a bounty on the scalps of Dakota peoples in Minnesota. There's a long legacy there. So if I don't respect the names that are given in that space, I'm also flying right in the face of a lot of these histories.
And your point on that, Anthony, that I think we really need to call out is really understanding the history behind the names and the words rather than just accepting what some stories may have been, meaning we've got to be open-minded enough to unlearn what we may have been aware anecdotally, kind of mainstream, and really be open to the mindset of unpacking the harm and the real history that was behind some of these individuals and leaders and names that were actually hurtful and detrimental to the people that were impacted by that. Mm-hmm. So it's more than the name. It's being open to learning what really was going on and why is this a figure that's historical.
So what about people who say it's a park? You know, don't think about history. Don't think about, you know, all that stuff. It's a park where I take my kids.
But that's the same reasoning that we get from members of the dominant culture whenever they don't want to deal with anything. You just let it be. You know, the interesting dynamic that I found with Lake Calhoun is as opposed to Ramsey County, mm-hmm. right, is that, you know, because they went back to the Dakota name, rightfully so, but Calhoun is more associated with slavery and that aspect of it, whereas what you mentioned, the governor, Alexander Ramsey Anthony, you know, was the territorial governor at the time of the Sioux Uprising, and the Indian agent who very corruptly stole most of the money from the Dakota, kind of helped setting up this entire episode of what happened to them, how they were exiled from Minnesota, and, you know, all the horrible stories, the internment at Fort Snelling, mm-hmm. and yet here we are in Ramsey County. There are so many names in Minnesota that as a Native American, as an indigenous person, are so offensive to us for what they did to our people. And yet every day, you know, we have to use those names in our everyday life. While we're aware of it, and most of our neighbors here, white Minnesotans, don't have a clue. And that's because we don't teach it. It's not taught. No one knows what really happened.
Well, just kind of to wrap this up, so we're just offering some friendly tips to be humble and understand that you should have the patience and vulnerability to ask about how you should be directed to say the name. And if you have an opportunity to be kind of this proactive ally and when you hear someone's name being butchered and you know for certain that there's a different way, a correct way to say it, it's actually okay for you to step in and feel, yeah, it helps. And that person may receive it differently and may learn from that. And definitely avoid trying to colonize someone's name by imposing your own version of their name. And largely just think about, what if this was your life? Thanks for another great discussion. We will see you next time. Luz Maria Frias.
Anthony Galloway.
Lily.
Get to Gibbon Ace.
And Marianne Combs.